As AI continues to revolutionize our world, there's a critical conversation we can't ignore: AI safety and security. And that's where HackerOne's AI red teaming comes into play, rigorously testing AI models to prevent them from being misled or exploited. HackerOne employs over 2 million ethical hackers, and 750 of them specialize in prompt hacking and other AI security and testing. So HackerOne isn't just theorizing, they're actively safeguarding AI's future. Just recently, a team unearthed over 100 vulnerabilities in just 2 weeks. So whether you're at the helm of a startup or steering product innovation at a large company, it's time to prioritize AI security. Visit HackerOne.com/AI for more. Again, HackerOne.com/AI.
This episode is brought to you by Gigantic. At Gigantic, you can level up your product skills through live, small group, cohort-based trainings. We're incredibly excited to welcome you to our next cohort of our product strategy training, kicking off in January of 2024. This course will take you through the frameworks that product leaders use at companies like eBay, DoorDash, Groupon, Rent the Runway in order to scale their teams. It's taught by Ben Foster, a friend of this podcast, who is the former chief product officer at Whoop. So come join us. Go to gigantic.is. That's gigantic.is. And save your seat for our January cohort. Your potential is gigantic, and we're here to help you reach it. Go to gigantic.is to reserve your seat today.
Welcome to the Rocket Ship Podcast. I'm Matt Goldman.
I'm Michael Sacca.
And I'm Joelle Goldman. Today we talked with Chris McMurdy, the founder of Dart Music. What'd you guys think?
This was really cool. I think this was the first music-focused startup that we've had on. And it was really interesting to hear how they're tackling a problem that he learned about from working at a classical music label, which I had no idea that metadata in classical music and discovery was a problem on iTunes and Amazon. So that was fascinating to hear about. What did you think?
Yeah, and he was actually one of the first companies in the first round of a music accelerator in Nashville. And it was really interesting to hear what that brought to the table for them and how it's helped them scale. So let's get into it.
Rocket Ship is proudly supported by
Bench is an online bookkeeping service
that provides you with tax-ready financial statements
from professional bookkeepers. Go to bench.co/rocketship to get 20% off.
20% off your first 6 months today.
Today.
Wistia is a video hosting platform built specifically for business. If you're using video as a part of your marketing strategy, you need to be able to measure its impact. Wistia is helping over 175,000 businesses do just that with premium video hosting, lead generation tools, and in-depth video analytics. For more about Wistia, visit wistia.com/rocketship.
Okay, cool. So give me kind of the background of what you're building with Dart Music.
Okay, excellent. So Dart Music is the first automated distribution platform built specifically for classical music. Another way to say it is new classical music cannot be sold in iTunes until now. You know, it's a pretty bold statement, but true, you know. You think, well, I know there's classical music in iTunes. How does it get there, right? There are specialized distributors for classical music who utilize teams of musicologists. I used to work for one of them, Naxos of America. And at Naxos, we had to use 30 musicologists who would manually input the metadata associated with classical music. And because of that, the overhead, as you can imagine, was very high and continues to be very high for them. So that's really a barrier to entry unless you can afford to pay their fee as a creator. And their fee is generally as much as 50% of an artist's royalties, which is a lot.
That's the musicologist fee?
Oh, sorry. That's the fee that a classical distributor is going to charge
Okay.
to to get music into iTunes, Spotify, Amazon, etc.
And you're already losing 30% from iTunes.
That's right.
Right. Okay.
Yeah.
And so why do you need all of these musicologists to tag? Why can't artists do it themselves?
Yeah, great question. So if you look at, you know, just we'll just stick with the most three common tags of metadata for music: album, artist, and song title. You know, we're here in Nashville, so obviously Taylor Swift is quite popular, as she is everywhere. But so album, artist, song title would be Taylor Swift 1989, Shake It Off, right? That covers all three of those. For classical music, one of my favorite pieces is Beethoven's Third Symphony. So if you look at Ludwig von Beethoven, Symphony No. 3 in E-flat major, Opus No. 55, the Eroica, Movement No. 1, Allegro con brio, as conducted by Leonard Bernstein, as performed by the Boston Symphony Orchestra. All right, so who's the album, artist, and song title again? You know.
Okay. Okay.
And in that example, you know, there are three languages referenced. You've got English, German, and Italian. English for "Shake It Off" is going to follow title casing: capital S, capital I, capital O. What is the name of the song, if you will, for that first movement of Beethoven? Is it the full name? Is it Allegro con brio? And is movement number one included in that? And if so, how? But Allegro con brio is Italian. It's not going to use title casing, right? It's going to use sentence casing. And so all of that is very important in how the DSPs, the digital service providers, which iTunes is a DSP, Spotify is a DSP, all of those nuances affect not just how they are tagged, but how a fan might find them in those services. You know, so it affects discoverability, it affects structure, it affects organization. When I was working at Naxos, a Grammy-winning composer named Michael Dougherty. You know, he had just won a Grammy, and we had distributed his music, but he couldn't find it. And he would call and be like, "Hey, why is my music not in iTunes?" I'm like, "It is. It's right here." And I'd send him the link. But when he would search for it, or you know, his fans would search for it, they could not find it.
Wow.
You had to have the direct link with that, and so. That is that complexity of metadata that our platform covers.
So how are you solving that? Like, is there a new methodology that you're taking to apply that? Or
yeah, you know, there are basically three pieces of technology at a very high level that our platform focuses on, and our algorithms are created to cover, and that is a known good database, which we affectionately call the Dartabase.
Okay. I like that.
We also utilize conditional logic so that we can determine, hey, what exactly is it you are wanting to do? And we will ask you questions based upon that, right? Very much like TurboTax. And then, of course, machine learning is playing a big part in this as well. Because how do you supplement, you know, the brain of 30 musicologists? And by the way, those 30 musicologists generally only get it about 72% correct most of the time in terms of meeting the standards of those stores. And, of course, if we can tell a machine what it is we're trying to do, and we have a standard that we are meeting, then you can create artificial intelligence off of that. And so that is what our platform is doing.
We'll be right back after a quick word from our sponsors. Now, back to the show. Interesting. So you're basically allowing independent classical artists to actually be discovered on iTunes.
Yeah, that's exactly right.
Very cool. Well, I'm wondering, how big is the classical market? You know, I know independent music is growing in the number of artists that are able to release. Has it been the same for classical?
It has been. It is now, I should say, in iTunes and Spotify. The independent classical market has been growing immensely in SoundCloud and in Bandcamp, because those are the only outlets that they've been able to enter into. You know, it's very difficult to monetize. It's very, at the very least, most of your fan base, when they want to hear new music, as awesome as SoundCloud and Bandcamp are, that's not generally the method of listening to music that you were just listening to 30 seconds ago. You know, you're quitting Google Play or iTunes and going into a different platform, which is just another barrier of entry. So we started combing SoundCloud and Bandcamp, and so far in the US and UK, we are just over 144,000 independent creators of classical music that are having this problem.
Wow. So now, are they playing like, you know, Beethoven's Third Symphony, or are they writing originals?
It's both, actually. And specifically, you know, since SoundCloud isn't monetized right now, they can record Beethoven or even something that's not in the public domain, or that is in the public domain, without repercussions, you know. That's another thing that our platform helps with is the mechanical licenses associated with recording something that a third party rights holder has access to. And we actually, another great music tech startup helps us with that out of San Fran. If you guys don't know about them, you should reach out. They're really awesome. Louder.fm, LOUDR.FM.
Cool.
So how do these classical artists find you? Because I assume that probably a lot of them aren't online most of the day, or maybe aren't the most tech savvy. So how are you getting in front of them to get them to know what you guys are doing?
Yeah, great. You guys have awesome questions. So, you know, we have, as we've been building the platform over the last 9 months, we've done zero marketing, and so they've been finding us just word of mouth and you know, through social media and whatnot. So now we are trying to get the word out there, and now that it's built, and our job is to let the world know about it, right? You know, so but we've had enough of a trickle or a select number of artists coming through that we can learn what's working, what's not working. So it's every, to answer your question, we are finding them by engaging them through, SoundCloud, as well as, going and talking, to ensembles. And they are finding us, thankfully through, great press like, Billboard magazine. There's an article coming out in Entrepreneur, magazine, this awesome interview you guys are gracious enough to give us. So the press is starting to pick up, but we have a long way to go to build our user base, and so that is where we are now. You know, is getting the word out.
So how has classical music evolved to where it is today? Like, if I was going to go on SoundCloud, would I hear something different than, you know, potentially going to the theater 20 years ago?
Oh, gosh, yeah, absolutely. We were just at we went to the Skirmelhorn, which is where the Nashville Symphony plays here in Nashville, and it's a really nice hall. But we went to hear five new composers on Wednesday perform their music, and the audience is, you know, jeans and t-shirt. And then we leave that to go to a house show with the Nashville Chamber Music Series. And then we could have gone to hear a premiere of Turandot, which is an opera, you know, and so it's pretty incredible that you can, I guess, kind of club hop classical music, you know. But all that to say, like, that is the landscape is, I don't know if you guys are fans of Radiohead or Arcade Fire or sure. The National or Wilco, but all of those bands have members that are classical musicians that write pure classical music. And, you know, there's nothing in the meta tags of the music they're releasing that connects them with as also an artist of Radiohead, you know.
Okay.
And that's part of that problem. But when you listen to Johnny Greenwood's music, you know, it doesn't sound like Radiohead. It sounds like a mix between, you know, Messy Ann and sometimes electronic dance music. You know, it's so, like, I've always felt like, or it's not really a feeling, it's a truth that innovation in music has always followed, you know, technological innovations. If you're Beethoven, you know, he was writing music because of this great new thing that just came out called the pianoforte, and the particular piano had cross strings, and so it was able to have a resonance unlike anything he'd heard before. So he's able to duplicate that which he did with an orchestra on, you know, in a single sitting on the piano. It's him following the technological advancements of his day. Well, the tech advancements of today is, of course, you know, MIDI software instruments, loop pedals, delay. So you've got violinists like Tracy Silverman, who is also a Nashvillian, but premiering violin concertos for John Adams and Nico Muhly. These are up-and-coming composers. John Adams is probably one of the most famous composers of our day, and Nico Muhly is a younger composer, but is, you know, just doing amazing things. But the what Tracy is doing and what these composers are doing are utilizing, you know, these electronic technologies and that that, you know, just sound, you know, completely different than Beethoven. And a lot closer to Radiohead, but not quite Radiohead, you know. And so you go to these concerts, and there are 500 kids sitting around eating pizza, drinking wine, just, you know, literally rocking out to art music, you know.
Wow.
What do you see in terms of adoption of classical music? Is that really growing right now, especially, like you said, with the younger people in jeans and t-shirts, and how do you kind of see that reflected?
Yeah, it is immensely growing. There are these underground scenes that are kind of popping up all over the different metropolitan areas, of which Nashville is one of the smaller, you know. But even here in Nashville, like, we've got six avant-garde chamber music ensembles that you know, we'll play anything from a house show to a bar. And then in London, you've got a incredible indie classical scene. You've got James Rhodes, who's playing Rachmaninoff, but, you know, he's doing it in a bar and explaining in his jeans, t-shirt, and Converse, you know, exactly what's happening in the music. And I think a lot like our tribe today, you know, we appreciate things like, you know, great coffee, and we're willing to pay a little extra for that. And, you know, we appreciate craft beer, you know. That same generation is really appreciates well thought out composed music. You also see it in other genres, you know, like EDM can be very complex in terms of form and structure. And you even have like Aphex Twin, who refers to himself as IDM, intelligent dance music, you know. And so I think we're going to see the classical, the genre classical. When you say classical, there's a big move, a very passionate move for you to not think about, you know, old dead white guys in wigs. Mm. So,
well, so the music industry has been kind of notorious as of late, where, you know, companies have been downsizing and going out of business. I'm curious to hear about your revenue model and how are you guys making this work?
Yeah, absolutely. So there are like most things, two sides to that coin, you know? So one side is the straight revenue model of let's make sure that this genre that has been underserved has the same opportunity as other genres. Well, the other genres have been paying a flat rate to get their music into these stores. So we can follow that model and offer it to classical music for the first time. So that's part of it, you know, is $40 per album per year. And that's a subscription fee. So 12 months later, if you want to keep your music in 196 stores worldwide, you pay another $40.
Okay.
And everyone feels it's well worth it because if, you know, it's at worst, it's a marketing expense, you know, of $40 to be available in places that give you legitimacy and authority, you know, in these stores. And then there's also, if you get four of your friends to buy it, you break even, you know.
Right.
so it's not a huge barrier of entry there to really copy that model, you know what I mean? But the flip side of that revenue question is, one of the assumptions or one of our questions as we went into it is, all right, no one's ever done this because it's really hard. If we focus on the hardest problem, is it going to solve all of these other problems, in its wake? You know, if you solve the hardest math problem, do the other math problems become easier? And it's been incredible to find that the answer is yes. You know, like the reason that, you're talking about how there's been, you know, this kind of implosion of the music industry is because of a lack of transparency, you know, and because of knowing who's getting paid what, and the inability to make edits to a digital product once it's live without taking it down and putting it back up. Well, all of that is metadata. That's driven by metadata. Mm-hmm. So since we focus on complicated metadata, we're finding that, hey, you can get paid faster and your music goes live faster. And hey, guess what? It's very clear where every cent goes, you know?
Right.
So, it's been really exciting to see the value propositions just kind of pop up for all of these different facets of the music industry.
So you guys went through a new music accelerator there in Nashville. I'd love to hear a bit about your experience going through an accelerator that's focused on music in particular.
Yeah, absolutely. It was incredibly... first off, it was the single hardest thing I've ever done, that we've ever done. It was very, very intense, but very much worth it. It was very, very good. But we, didn't know if we would get in. You know, here we are in Country Music USA saying, hey, we're classical. And the lead sponsor was the CMA, which is Country Music Association.
Okay.
And I used to joke and say, well, maybe they'll think it's Classical Music Association, you know. But all that to say, we were fortunate enough to get in, and Project Music was incredible, absolutely phenomenal. We hope to get three things. We hope to actually learn what it is to have a business. You know, can we make money at this?
Mm-hmm.
We hope to have access to folks within the industry to be able to get in front of them and tell them what we're doing, but also to find out what problems they're having and seeing if there's a relationship there and if there's a connection, you know. And that's where we started to learn about these different value propositions of, you know, that even major labels are having as a result of poor metadata. And then we also hope to had the opportunity to raise capital, and Project Music delivered on all three in spades. It was wonderful. Not only did they, you know, kind of call our baby ugly and beat the snot out of it and get it to a place to where we had a viable business model, but we did have the opportunity to to really get in front of everyone in the music industry, not just in Nashville, but New York and LA as well. And the encouragement we received and from the industry has been, you know, the partnerships that have resulted has been incredible. And then through the process, we raised almost $1.5 million of seed funding.
Nice.
If it wasn't for, because of Project Music, we have a shot at this, you know? And so, I'm very proud of how we've grown over the last year. And, you know, we have a fully staffed team and we're working hard every day to get it done.
That is awesome. That's really cool to hear. And I'm so glad that, you know, somebody is putting kind of the accelerator model behind technology and music. So
it's really cool.
So where can we keep up with you online?
Dartmusic.com, DARTMUSIC.com. Twitter is @HelloDart.
So you have a promotional offer too, right?
Yes, we do. In celebration of our launch, if you sign up to use the platform before October 31st, not only do you get to keep 100% of your royalties, but we will distribute your album for free for the first year.
That is so you waive the $40 per album fee.
That's exactly right. Yeah.
That's cool. All right. Very cool. And we always have an outro song. I want to let you pick it today. What should we go out on?
Oh, that's awesome. Well, since we spoke so much about Beethoven, let's do Beethoven's Third.
Okay. All right. Cool.
Thanks for listening to this episode of the Rocket Ship Podcast. If you enjoyed it, we have tons of other awesome episodes on our website. Check them out, rocketship.fm.
And if you'd like a transcription of this show, we have now partnered with Jot Engine, who does some fantastic transcriptions. So you can go to rocketship.fm and check out this episode's show page, and there'll be a link for the transcription. And if you'd like to get a transcription yourself, go to jotengine.com and sign up.